This episode is brought to you in part by Thomas Nelson, publisher of The Joy Challenge. Discover the ancient secret to experiencing worry-defeating, circumstance-defying happiness. Written by pastor and best-selling author Randy Frazee and is available everywhere audiobooks are sold.
From Christianity Today, this is The Art of Pastoring. I'm Jared Wilson.
And I'm Ronnie Martin.
Guide me, O thou great Jehovah, pilgrim through this barren land.
Ronnie Martin, how are you, brother?
Hey, man, what's going on, Jared C?
It's been a little while. We've been on a little break.
A little bit of a hiatus, I know. It's been different for us. We were dropping these apps pretty consistently once a week, and there was a little bit of a break. And then we had a conversation with CT, who sponsors the pod, and they kind of filled us in a little bit to what they were thinking with how we did this. You want to tell everybody kind of what the format is for us?
Yeah, well, they're thinking, you know, this would be a seasonal podcast. So we've had people who've missed us, which is nice.
Super nice.
I get messages, you get messages.
Yeah.
We see things on social media, people saying, hey, where's the next episode? Where's the latest podcast? Are you guys done? And no, we're not done. We've taken just a little break, so we're going to do a couple episodes here that will come out. But then the idea is CT envisions this as kind of a seasonal thing, so there'll be season one and then a break and then season two. So probably coming back in the fall for the official second season.
Right. Yes? Yeah, I think so. So this allows us, I think, just to focus a little bit more on what we're doing. Probably make it so that we're not, you know, losing our minds recording too many podcasts. Well,
and absence makes the heart grow fonder, right?
Absolutely.
So once the next season comes out, if we just dropped round the clock, people would get sick of us. If you can imagine that, people would get sick of us.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine, but it's. And we also do, I don't know, we do other stuff in our lives. We have other podcasts. We have other things we're working on and writing and sure. I don't know what we do.
I don't know. This is it, man. I live for this. I
this
get
is
up.
It.
Yeah. I think if I'm not recording with Ronnie, what am I going to do? What am I going to do with my day?
All you can hope is that this becomes the full-time gig. I understand.
Ooh,
I get it.
That would be nice. We would really have to up our social media game to get the promotion.
We would have to up a lot of things. Yeah. A lot of things would have to be upped. Yes.
Well, and we're talking about social media today. That's our subject du jour.
Yeah.
Yeah. How social media relates to ministry, how ministry leaders, pastors should be thinking about using their own social media, about their own people on social media. Oh, man. But I thought we might would start with just kind of giving some of our own history with social media, just kind of our own personal backstory. Where have you been in relation to these different streams, these different platforms?
Oh, man. Yeah, I always like to say I feel like I was a little late to the game. I certainly was late to the Facebook, Twitter game for sure. I remember my wife was, she'd been on Facebook and she's like, you need to get on this. And I'm like, why? I don't know. I was like one of those guys, you know? And then she finally kind of got me in on it. So I came into it so late and then Twitter really late. And so it's been a while now. You know, it's going on a decade with these things now. But it was like all of my peers had been on it for a long time by the time I jumped on. And I don't even remember what the hesitation was other than I just don't think I understood it. And I maybe still don't understand it, if we're being honest. Man, I started, so really my first dive into all of this was MySpace.
Yeah, me too.
If we're getting back down to the roots of it. So because I did music and I was an artist and all those things. So it was a way that, like, you know, the label I worked with at the time, Tooth & Nail Record, you know, you had to have a MySpace page. And that was one of the ways you pushed your new albums and your tours and your releases. And so, man, MySpace was kind of everything for a while. I don't remember how long it lasted. MySpace was awesome.
Yeah, and I was a late adopter to Facebook because I loved MySpace so much. And when all my friends, when they eventually opened it up, because Facebook originally was just college students.
That's right.
I don't know if even a lot of users know that. But in the beginning, you had to have an EDU email address to be on there.
Wow.
Yeah, and if you watch the movie The Social Network, they kind of give the history of like how they're opening it up in different campuses. It was very smart because they made it like the it thing to have. And they started with very key campuses, Harvard and Yale and Ivy League stuff.
Right, that's right.
And then it
that's
was like, oh, Baylor's got it. And oh, now, you know, we have it at Texas Tech. And that became a deal. So in the beginning, like I was too old for it. Now the state of Facebook is I think someday I'll be old enough for it. Because it used to be for just the kids. Now it's just for grandmom and granddad.
It's grandma, granddad, and like geriatric millennials, right?
Geriatric millennials. Yeah. So I barely use it, but I remember when it first came about, it even seemed too busy for me then. Now it especially seems really busy. I prefer Twitter. But I loved MySpace because like you could play a song, you know, you had a song as part of your profile and people you know, the youngins don't understand that. But when you pulled up somebody's page, they would have picked a song that would just automatically start playing. And
it was far more like it was more personalized than what we have.
Yeah.
Now, you know, in a weird way.
It felt like a scrapbook kind
it
of
did. Yes.
locker, like the inside of your locker, you know,
yes.
where you put your pictures. And yeah, it just was a different vibe. So I was late to Facebook, late to Instagram. Mm. I think I was pretty early. The only thing I was fairly early on, I wasn't there at the beginning, but I joined onto Twitter probably the quickest in terms of when things began.
Okay.
And still Twitter is my favorite stream because I think it's because it's become more complicated, but it's just so streamlined and I can kind of curate what I want to see. And
yeah,
you know, you have just a certain amount of space and there's not all these bells and whistles. And I know they're trying to add things. I don't know. They're like photos, like fleets. Have you heard of that?
Yeah. That didn't seem, did that really take off though? I don't know.
Someone was just talking about it the other day. I don't even really know what it is. It's like Instagram stories on Twitter or something like that.
Dude, I love how grandpa we are right now. I don't know what what's that fleet thing on the Twitter, you know?
Yeah. Well, how have these things, how do they integrate into your life now? Have they affected your life? How do you think about that? Like, what's your philosophy, Ronald J. Martin? What's your philosophy of social media?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really great question. I think that kind of gets us kind of focused on what we want to talk about with some of these things.
Oh, have I been wasting your time up until now? Is that...
Jared,
is that your passive aggressive way of saying, can we get to the point?
I'm not passive aggressive. I'm just straight up aggressive. So
there you go.
Don't have to worry about that. No, I've loved everything we've talked about up to now. Of course, Jared C. My philosophy is just, let's key in on Twitter specifically. To me, like the way I receive Twitter is I enjoy just reading people's comments on things, getting their commentary on things. I actually learn. This is where I get articles and stuff that I normally wouldn't seek out when people retweet articles. So it's really helpful for me. It's like educational for me in some ways. For me personally, I just look at it like kind of an encouragement, edifying kind of a tool. My philosophy with all of social media is I don't argue. I have a no argument philosophy with social media where I'll clear the air on something. So sometimes if I phrase something, I was just sloppy, or if it was wrong, or if it was potentially hurtful and somebody calls me out on that, I'll go, oh, you know what? Yeah, I gotcha. It was just, it was a bad post, or it wasn't thoughtful enough. So sorry about that. I didn't mean that. But I don't want to get into a back and forth debate with anybody. So if I ever post something and somebody you can tell wants to get into it with me, like I just don't engage. I don't do it because you just never see that really go to a place that ever becomes constructive. It seems like, I'm not saying it never does. Sometimes you see really good debate and constructive back and forth dialogue resolve itself in a really great way. I've seen that many times. I've seen it happen more the opposite though. And so I just try not to make it a tool for debating and argument. And part of the reason for that is that I'm a really bad debater. It's not a great space for me. It kind of dives into all this sort of like nerdy, techie, like, oh, but then did you read what this person said and that person said? I mean, if somebody wants to debate with me, let me just say right now, you're going to win. You're going to win the debate. So I would rather just not even.
Good to know. I'll file that away.
I would rather just not even begin that process. So that's kind of my philosophy, is keep it edifying and encouraging, avoid argumentation and debate. I don't think there's anything wrong with debate. That's just a personal thing for me. So that's kind of how I view it. I think Instagram to me is fun and enjoyable.
Yeah.
It's just fun to see people's pictures, keep up with their lives that way. And Facebook, I would just be very, I'm very careful with Facebook. But Facebook for me is where I know the majority of my church is, Facebook and Instagram. So yeah. When I post something on Facebook, I want it to be really edifying and not anything that could be misunderstood.
Okay.
So on Twitter, I'm happy to be a little more vague or artistic at times. Facebook, I want it to just be crystal clear because I'm always thinking of the congregation reading it. And I don't want to put them at a disadvantage. So
sure,
that's where I go at it philosophically. How do you hit it?
Yeah, well, I think I use it somewhat similarly to you. Facebook, I have the least amount of use for. Mm. I probably go on maybe once a day, maybe twice a day, just look at my notifications. I certainly am not scrolling and reading all kinds of things. I kind of look at the top two or three things that the algorithm is telling me that I need to see, or I check messages, and yeah. I have an author page that I keep updated. But yeah, I've also curated that. It's not as frustrating an experience as it used to be. Because my personal account, I'm only friends with people I actually know. Okay. So I've done that on purpose to keep that just within kind of friends and family.
Gotcha.
So sometimes I do say something a little more provocative than I might on Twitter or something there because I at least I know it's people that I know and I'm not going to get into a big flame war or people are going to freak out and willfully misunderstand that kind of thing. I use Instagram similarly to the way you do as well, and just in the sense that it's for entertainment. It's just for fun. I do post things from around the house and friends and family and stuff.
Yeah.
But mainly I just am posting goof off stuff. I do memes and different things. And I have a zero drama policy on Instagram.
Nice.
Like the minute somebody comments, like in any way sideways, something critical, mean, or just overly serious, I'm like, that's it. I mean, I ruthlessly delete comments on Instagram.
I was wondering what happened every time I got deleted on your Insta.
Yeah, I just want Instagram to kind of be the living room, you know, where we're just kind of hanging out. It's a chill space, and you can hang out if you're a cool person, but if you're gonna be weird, you're not welcome in my living room. Twitter, I used to argue. I've been on Twitter a long time, and in the early days, I would assume people in good faith when they would criticize or something or ask questions. We're really open for dialogue. And after a few years, you discover like it's so rare, right, for anyone to say, you know what, I changed my mind about that because of something I saw on Twitter or because of the conversation we're having. So I have in the last probably 3 years or so begun to use it like you do as well. It's purely to try to edify. I'll link to my writing, that sort of thing, you know, stuff for the school. Every now and then, if I have kind of a gut instinct that somebody is asking questions in good faith and not just trolling or being weird, I'll try to engage with them. But that's very rare, mainly just because of time issues. I just don't have the time to be on Twitter arguing with people all day. I sometimes wonder how people have the time, particularly pastors who are on Twitter arguing with people all day. And I just think
some of these guys that are like on it, it feels like they're on it 10 hours a day.
Well, you can look at their stream and actually see the timing of their posts. And there's within every hour there. And I'm just thinking, you are literally on here all day. You have to be
kept
up this pace. But I just want to edify, put some thoughts out there. But my philosophy of Twitter is that it can be used any way you want. Right. Totally. I don't think there's any rule. I know guys who are like, I just follow sports accounts and I just talk about sports or
totally.
I just goof off. I use it, to be humorous and be funny. I think that's fine. Ministry update, however you want to use it. I just think the only rules are the Christian rules for speech, right? The biblical rules for the tongue. Maybe let's talk about that for a little bit. Why do you think people, so many Christians seem to separate social media out from what they would normally agree is that's not how you talk to other people. If we were face to face, we wouldn't talk this way to each other because we know that the tongue is a fire, because we know that our speech is to be seasoned with salt, because we know we're to be gentle as part of the fruit of the Spirit and patient. So why do we just say, well, that doesn't really apply once I get on the internet?
Yeah, man, I think that's such a great question. And I think actually seeing you post some really good kind of admonitions in that respect. When you see some guys getting, some guys that are in vocational ministry and they're posting things that are just, they're a little surprising and shocking. They're not seasoned with salt. They're not keeping in step with the Spirit. I've seen you post things that just said, hey, this falls in line with the qualifications of being an elder, you know, and how do you separate that? I mean, because, you know, typing with our thumbs is still part of how we speak. It's still considered speech. And there is something about these platforms, and maybe it's because we're not face to face with people that I think brings up this idea of, or this feeling that it's not really us, it's a persona. And it's not really, so even if I'm typing something, it's not exactly coming from me. You're not exactly hearing the tone of my voice. We're not actually face to face. And you can mask it by defining it as, you know, rigorous debate or, you know, things of that nature. I just think people, they let their guards down in a way that I think some of the stuff that you just quoted a verse from James, and you know, we've been preaching through that book, but and James goes after that, right? He's saying, hey, you guys are putting yourselves into a situation where from the abundance of the heart, your mouth is speaking. And so this is a platform that just draws out a lot of the concealed ugliness of our heart. And because I'm not hearing the tone of your voice, I'm not looking at you in the eye, we're not sharing a meal, we're not hanging out, it just makes it that much easier for me to sort of slough it off and say, well, you know, I just engage in some lively debate, you know, on Twitter. It's like, yeah, but you're really not doing that, because what you're doing is you're tearing away at the character a lot of times by your tone of a fellow image bearer. And like, that's not cool.
Yeah.
We shouldn't be doing that, right?
Yeah. I think what you just said in terms of remembering that we're image bearers is really key, because I think what happens unconsciously or subconsciously is when we get online, we dehumanize the other person. So it's not just that I adopt a kind of persona. When I'm on Twitter, I'm social media's Martin Luther, or I'm social media's, you know, Paul in Galatians, right? It's always, or I'm Jesus in the temple, you know. It's never Paul being gentle like the nursing mom. It's always Paul telling people to castrate themselves. That's who I am on Twitter. But not only am I putting on a persona, but I'm treating you as a persona as well. So we objectify others, and we see them only as these sort of category things. You disagree with me, therefore you are a liberal, or you're a Marxist, or a progressive, or you know, whatever it is. And we create these labels, and now we're just kind of hammering away at our idea of people, and forgetting that there's actually a soul really on the receiving end of what you're saying and doing.
Yeah, I think that's such an important point, because at the end of the day, man, every time you post something on Twitter, it's as Jared C. Wilson. It's nobody right. else, right? Yeah. I mean, like, however we want to be sort of received or perceived, at the end of the day, man, it is you. These posts are coming from an area in our hearts that is true. It's altogether true. And man, I just think it's too easy for us to forget that. And you see a lot of people that just think they're not being reminded how applicable that biblical truth is, even on social media, right?
This episode is brought to you in part by Thomas Nelson, publisher of 9 Lives and Counting, A Bounty Hunter's Journey to Faith, Hope, and Redemption, written by Dwayne Dog the Bounty Hunter Chapman. 9 Lives and Counting not only offers a fresh perspective on well-known life events, but also ventures into behind-the-scenes territory and backstories never shared publicly. 9 Lives and Counting is available everywhere audiobooks are sold. Visit thomasnelson.com/audio to learn more.
I have this friend. He used to be a member of our church, and he's since moved on to another church, but he's friends with some of these like caustic personalities on social media. And so he'll like see when they tear people like me or others apart.
Yeah.
And he feels sort of caught between. I remember him saying to me one time, like, gosh, you know, if you knew him in real life, he's not really like that. And I just say, brother, he's really like that, or else he wouldn't be. You know what I mean? It's not like you become a different person. I mean, you can, I guess Jekyll comes out maybe when you get on social media. But you're right. That's you. That's really you.
Twitter is real life.
That's right. You don't get to say, because it's virtual or mediated through a screen, that it's not me who's saying these things, and it's not actually them who's. These things are landing in their ears, right?
Yeah.
And I just think, you know, the depersonalization of it
That's a good word.
You know, contributes to so much. And I think recently Russell Moore, who was moving on from his work at the ERLC to Christianity Today at our mothership here, in his little article about kind of the transition, he talked about the impact of all of the hatred that he has received on his children. And one of his sons coming to him and saying something like, "Are you in trouble, or are you a bad person?" Or, you know, something like that, because of what, the trickle down effect of that. Yeah.
Like, and Dad, are these things true, Dad? I need to know. It sounds like
exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think when these people are just throwing these arrows out there, they're not thinking of the person who's receiving them as a real person with real wounds and real fears and a real heart and with families all those sorts of things.
Isn't it interesting that, and I don't know if it hits you this way, I'm imagining it does, but isn't it interesting that I'm always so surprised when you see somebody engaging in like a good faith back and forth, like a good faith argument, even on Twitter, like when and it's interesting to me that the amount of qualifications somebody has to do, and they say, "Hey, look, I'm really not trying to be, I'm asking this in good faith. I'm not assuming, I'm not trying to trick you. I really just do want to know your opinion on this thing. I actually like what you just said. It's going to sound like by this question, I don't. And I promise you, I do." You know, and we have to do all these backflips into these things because it's just become so contentious.
Yeah. Well, and it's funny because the other day I saw somebody say something like, whenever somebody says, you know, prefaces their question with, you know, honest question or serious question, I know that it's just a subterfuge to, you know, to be a troll or whatever. And I got to thinking, like, when I say that, I actually mean it.
Right. Yeah.
And it's because I'm trying to diffuse what a lot of people sometimes hear, which is the same thing I hear, is you have a constant barrage of people who aren't asking questions in good faith, who are just trying to tear you down, who are just trying to troll you or flame you or whatever. So when I say honest question here, I'm actually saying, "Hey, okay, don't freak out. I may disagree, but I'm genuinely asking from a place of, you know, of openness and curiosity, that I really want to know how you might explain this or that, you know, thing. I'm not trying to get into a fist fight with you." And so, like, we can't even say honest question because of what this stuff has done to our language.
Honest question means dishonest question.
Exactly.
Maybe we should just preface it with dishonest question. Maybe that'll flip it.
Maybe so. Brother, how have you thought about, you know, the use of these things as a pastor, the way that you use social media? I think we can talk in a moment about how we think about our congregations using it, but for right now, as you approach, and I know you mentioned already just trying to edify and that sort of thing, but how has it impacted your own ministry, or how do you see it sort of as part of what you do or as part of your regular life as a minister?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's so funny because, it's actually had a positive impact, I think, on my local ministry. Part of it is the philosophy that I have that, man, I only want to do something that doesn't stir things up, but that edifies. So I think that's part of it. But it really has spurred on a lot of extra conversations. And how that plays out is I'm not just saying this really happens. You know, I'll see people around our town, let's say at a restaurant, or, you know, you run into them for, at a coffee shop or what have you. And it really is a conversation starter, and it goes both ways. So I've had a lot of people in our congregation say, "Hey, man, I really like that article you reposted. I read that. That was really good. That was helpful for me because I've been thinking about that, or I needed to hear that. Or, hey, I really like that encouragement you posted from, you know, the Psalms or whatever it was. And that, man, I was having a hard day, and that, you know, that reminder of the nearness of God and something of that nature, that was really helpful to me." And so I think it's been really helpful. It helps us begin and further spiritual conversations, even with people that follow me in our town that aren't necessarily believers, but we have friendships. I think it's just a great opportunity for that, because you can always reference that and say, "Hey, that thing you posted." I think it really provides inner church and even like missional opportunities and open doors. And it happens to me over and over again. I think God's really used it in that way for sure.
Yeah. When I was pastoring in Vermont, Twitter was a great encouragement to me because I did not have around me a pastoral fraternity of any kind, or network of any kind that was focused on the gospel. I mean, you know, I had pastor friends around, and we were kind of, the way I described it was, we were in the same book, but we're on different pages.
Yeah.
And so, you know, to find someone who's on the same page as you is so comforting and helps you not feel alone.
Totally.
And Twitter, the way I curated my Twitter, you know, experience back then was really helpful because I could find the guys who were on the same page. And I thought, okay, I'm not alone in this. I'm not a weirdo in thinking about these things. And so it was just a great source of encouragement to me if I treated it well and was circumspect about the way I used it and that sort of thing. And then even today, you know, I don't quite have that same issue, but I have tried to curate my stream. I don't follow anybody and everybody.
Mm-hmm.
I've tried to follow the people who speak things that are thought-provoking to me, that are edifying to me, that are encouraging and helpful to me. Even people I disagree with theologically or otherwise, I still want the voices that are thoughtful, not the ones who are crazy and flame-throwing. So I'll follow thoughtful people that I disagree with.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that sort of thing. And so it can be, these days you got to use the mute and block buttons a lot more than I think we did in the old days. But if you figure that out, you can actually create kind of a enjoyable experience. It doesn't have to be a soul suck.
I totally agree.
To be on there. Let's talk about now our congregations using social media.
Yeah.
Have you, are you a social media policeman? Are you scrolling your congregants' feeds to look for thought crimes and things like that?
Oh, man. Yeah. I mean, it's in the job description, right? I have all the time.
Maybe now. I don't know.
Yeah, that's true. No, gosh, it's so funny because with the craziness of the past year and, you know, my team, our elders, you know, we actually had some conversations about this and we came to the conclusion that, hey, we don't really feel like it's our job to police people, our congregation on social media. People have to be able to express the opinions they want on whatever it is that they want, politics or whatever it is, even if it sort of plunges them into some serious territory. I think what our radar is up for is the manner in which they are posting, kind of like what we talked about earlier. So yeah. I don't feel like it's my place, even as a person's pastor, to say, hey, you shouldn't have posted that political opinion. But I do think that if there is any sort of language or sort of spirit that falls out of line with the gospel, and they're a member of the church, I think I can do it very graciously, but I can also have a conversation with them and maybe even ask what's going on. Hey, you know, how are you doing? Okay. Cause I noticed that, man, you seem really angry and there's like a tone there. And man, I'd love to just hear what's going on in your life. Cause maybe you're dealing with some stuff that I don't know about and it's triggering some of these things. But I do think it's like anything else. If we see social media as something that flows from the heart ultimately, and it is speech, then I think even pastorally, we're obligated, as much as God gives us eyes to see the things that we see, to kind of go after our congregation in a loving and gracious way. So I don't know, that's kind of how we've thought through it.
I think that's really good. The distinction between the content, so to speak, right? The opinion and the tone or the way that those things are expressed, I think is really, it was really important. And I think as a minister looking at what our people are posting, even if it's just incidental, right? I probably would worry a little bit if we were just like meticulously scrolling through people's accounts looking for things that we could, that seems a tad bit fair sale. But if you're just on there and you're noticing things that kind of rub you the wrong way, to me, the question would be, okay, is this just because I disagree with it? Is this bothering me because I don't share this opinion?
Right.
Or I think they're wrong, you know? Or does it bother me because it is somewhat inflammatory or it's ungracious or the manner in which they're delivering it is out of step with the biblical commandments on speech and and how to treat others. And then I think the other thing to look for is this a pattern?
Yeah.
Right. Because everybody has a bad day.
Absolutely.
You know, everyone has trouble expressing themselves here and there. Everyone kind of loses their temper at some moment or just has a weak moment. So if this is just kind of like an off, I'm not talking to somebody about the one time I saw, but if it's just like an ongoing pattern, like they're looking for fights, they're trying to stir things up constantly. that's a spirit of division. That's a spirit of you know, sometimes gossip, that sort of thing.
That's good.
Those are certainly worthy of addressing for the same reason, you know, that we were just talking about in terms of you don't create a division between the virtual world and the real world when it comes to speech. You can't just say, well, it's just Facebook. You know, I don't see them talking like this in person or at the church or anything like that. Mm. Well, but it's still a public sphere. It still, you know, affects witness, you know, all those sorts of things.
For sure. Yeah, that's good.
I do think, though, I don't know what you think about this, but say somebody is talking about politics, whether you agree or disagree, I think I'd go either way. But if, and they're talking about it a lot in a passionate way. So they're not necessarily saying anything that would be sinful, let's put it that way. But they're just, maybe there's an idolatry being shown because they just seem so heavily invested in that particular issue.
Yeah.
Is that something, I mean, I think tread lightly, because that could be true of anything. Man, this person, you know, posts about football a whole lot, you know. But for maybe there's an idol kind of coming out that is worth having a conversation, not a rebuke, but just to say, hey, talk to me about this a little bit, because it seems like this is a preoccupation for you, and I just want to know, like, where your heart's at. Is that something a pastor could do, or would that seem today like poking your nose where it doesn't belong?
Yeah, man, I think that's such a great question. Man, it would take so much nuance, I think, the way you approach something like that. And I think if you have a relationship with somebody, you could do it more easily than if you didn't. But I do think that we want to make, there's a tension, is what I'll say. And I think we don't want the tension to make us pull back too far or to kind of push us in too deep. And so we're never, you know, we're going to always strive to get that tension right. But to be able to, I think the way you phrased it was really good. And we learned this through wisdom over the years, which is, hey, let's grab lunch. And, you know, during lunch, you say, hey, tell me, what have you been posting lately on social media? And, you know, what are your interests these days? And, hey, I've noticed that there's been a few posts like this. What have you been thinking with that? I think it's all in our approach, you know, to kind of get where somebody's head is at. And I think that there's, you know, the way we do it with wisdom and with care, as long as they feel that, I think that, I think any way that we can invest in people's lives is probably usually a good thing. But
yeah, for me, it's that balance, right? Because again, I want to say, I don't think there's any rules in terms of how you use these things. You know, use it according to your interests, and people may just be flippant and whatever with it. But for those who are heavily engaged and on these things a lot, I just want to kind of put the question out there.
Yeah.
What kind of impression would some, if they peeked into this, what would they think is the most important thing to you? What would they think is your object, primary object of affection? What would they think your heart revolves around? I don't think that makes it sinful to always talk about sports or always talk about politics or always talk about whatever. Well, the exception I would make is that mainline marketing stuff, right? The oils and the Tupperware and the makeup. That's sinful. Don't talk about it. No, I'm just kidding. But people who talk about one particular thing, they're just using that stream that way. You know, I'm not saying it's sinful to do that, but consider, is it revealing something about not just where your head's at, but where your heart's at as well? Would somebody look at your social media and come away thinking Jesus is the most significant thing, you know, person to this person?
I think that's the question to ask. I think that's really, and I think that's important. I think the other thing that I think is attached to that is, man, are you presenting yourself in a way that you make yourself unapproachable to your congregation? I mean, we have to think about that, like, because a lot, we're not going to know everybody to the degree that we can know some people in, you know, within a church context. So we want to make sure that we're people that if we're going off on a tangent constantly politically, and even though we're not saying anything technically wrong and it's just our opinion, you know, that's going to be tough for some people to ever get near you, because they're going to be under the impression you're kind of on one track all the time, and that's intimidating or it's distasteful to them. And so are we presenting what you just said, the aroma of Christ? And that doesn't necessarily have to mean that we're technically posting something wrong, but in the flavor and in the sort of the tone and the smell of how we post things, you know, I don't know.
Yeah. And I think that's important that, you know, there are people who say that people who are concerned about tone and all that are just weak and wusses and everything else. But the Bible says so much about it, speaking the truth in love.
It does.
Being gracious, being gentle, all those things are important, and not just optional add-ons, but commandments, things that we're to be obedient about. So something good stuff to kind of remember as not just think about our own use of social media, but as we consider our people's use of social media as well. Can we make Jesus look big, or do we make him look incidental? Or
that's it. That's the word. That's the word.
Yeah. I think we should probably say, speaking of social media, to our listeners, if you feel like it, you know, if you've got your druthers, if you've had your fill of Twitter arguments, you could go leave us a good review on iTunes or Spotify.
That's right.
Or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You could go do that. It would take, you know, literally 30 seconds to spread some cheer in our direction that way. And certainly recommend us to your friends. Share us on social media. We would really appreciate that. Yeah. And you have been listening to The Art of Pastoring.
Open now the crystal fountain, whence the healing waters flow. Let the fiery cloudy pillar lead me on my journey through.
You can find Ronnie and me on Twitter at Ronnie J. Martin and at Jared C. Wilson. Feel free to hit us up with questions and potential topics for the show. We'd love to hear from you. The Art of Pastoring is a production of Christianity Today. It's produced by Mike Cosper, editing by Mike Cosper and Aaron Leslie, mixing by Aaron Leslie. Our theme song is Guide Me, O Thou Great Jehovah by Jeremy Casella.
This episode was brought to you in part by the Lord of Spirits podcast. Many Christians yearn to break free of the influence of secular materialism and to understand the union of the seen and unseen worlds as made by God. What is the spiritual world like? Tune in wherever you get your podcasts.